Good afternoon, everyone. We are here. My name is Amrin. It's the 7th of September today. It's just gone 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and we are here at the LABC cafe outside, and we're going to be having discussions all things smart city. So what it is for a Leicester smart city. So I'm just going to give you an introduction. I myself is Amrin Razak. I'm a community reporter and have been working on this project for some weeks now. So today we're going to be talking all things smart city in Leicester. And then I'm just going to get everybody to introduce themselves. So firstly, I'm going to just go to my left, and Swathi, if you'd like to introduce yourself, please.
Thanks, Amrin. Hello, everyone. I'm Swathi Virmani. I'm senior lecturer in economics at De Montfort University.
I'm Ruben. I'm a senior lecturer in economics as well at De Montfort University.
I am Zamzam. I'm a community reporter.
Hi, I'm Edward Cartwright, professor of economics at De Montfort University.
Hi, I'm Bindu, and I'm also working with the Smart City project, and I'm community reporter.
Hi, I'm Medina. I'm a student. I'm doing community reporting as well.
Thank you very much. So now we know who's around the table today for this discussion. I'd like to ask you all, and we'll go around again, is what mode of transport have you used today? And if you can just go into how your experience has been for you getting here. If we start off with that.
Right, interesting question. So I took a train to come to Leicester, so I don't live locally. And I've been using the train app for a while now, since I started using trains a couple of years ago. So not really different for me, but yes, it helps in, you know, deciding the time I should take the train and when my scheduled meetings or classes are. And so it really helps. So that's one app that I always use whenever I take the train. So it's the Train Line app.
So I'm based in York, so I came here by car. Before coming, I just estimated the time it was going to take me to arrive here on Google Maps. My wife suggested I should use Waze, the other app, but I stuck with Google Maps. And I arrived here on time, but then I needed to walk from the parking lot to this place. And I have to say that the experience walking was different than driving. Walking, it was not that good, but by car, it was fine.
Okay. Can you just touch on why it wasn't good then, Ruben?
Yeah, it sent me, I think the car park is just one block from here, but it sent me two roads to the right and then two to the left, and then left again, and then I reached the place. So I don't know why it's
so not good for a new user then. So obviously, I don't know, it's maybe linked to Google Maps, so that's something we can probably discover maybe a bit more later.
But I actually needed to go to the toilet, so I was in a hurry. So it was a really bad experience.
Oh, God, I'm sorry about that. Okay, thank you. Thank you for that, Samsung.
Yeah, so I came here with the bus today. I used the bus app to check the time that I was coming. So that's first bus, because that's what bus that goes to my area. I also used the bus app to purchase my ticket. So when I walked from my house, I knew how long there were to the next bus. Left myself for like 6 minutes, walked there, and then on the bus stop there's a new digital signs that's there. It tells you digitally live how far away how many minutes away the bus is. But you also you can press a button and it says information. So if you I think it's for purpose use, so for people who's got maybe disabilities who can't see, it's for them to hear. So you press that and it actually out loud tells you what street you're in, and also it tells you how long left, how many minutes left for the bus.
Awesome. I've not tried that bit, so I'll look into that.
That's always play with it.
That's good. And it's good to know that it's working for people that who may actually need it. So that's really good. Thank you for that, Edward.
Yeah, I came in by car and then walked around the city quite a lot this morning. I used Google Maps this morning to prepare, because I had quite a few meetings all in different places in the city. So it was just to kind of get a track of how long it was going to take me to get from A to B. So yeah, that's my journey so far.
So nothing happened untoward or anything in terms of your travel here, or it was just quite straightforward?
Yeah, I'd say quite straightforward today, is unusual for Leicester.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to get at, you know, because normally everyone, we're always complaining about something, you know. So thank you for that. That's great, Edward. Bindu, what about you?
Hi, I came by car, and my son dropped me here.
Okay.
Before, he was just complicated with the way you're going. You're going to the temple or you're going to the LCB, and then I said, yeah, we are going. He said, okay, then I have to use my app. I said, no, you don't have to, because we are local public here, so we don't use any app, and we just came straight here.
Okay.
Thank you.
That's great. Thank you. What about you, Medina?
I also came by bus, and I used Apple Pay to just buy my ticket on the bus. And they have like this new tap-on, tap-off thing, which I think is so useful, because it's so annoying carrying coins, especially because most of the time they don't have change for notes and stuff. Yeah. So I used that, and I also checked the traffic as well on Google Maps, the time, what bus I needed to take to get here on time.
Okay.
So that's what I did.
So in terms of when you're getting your ticket to, you know, bus transport, do you ever go to the actual First Bus app, or do you go straight through Apple Pay?
It depends what type of ticket I'm getting, because if I'm getting one that's longer than a day, I'll get it on the app, because I don't like carrying the ticket on me, because I feel like I'm going to lose it. But if it's a day, I'll just get it, because then you can just pass it on. I think it's a good deed to just pass on the after you've used it. Yeah.
Good. Okay, brilliant. Well, I came in today. I got dropped off, and my friend was like, oh, do I need to put Google Maps? I was like, no, you don't. I was like, I know where we're going. It's literally straight down, is left, right. She's like, okay, it's good. But normally, I do get the bus as well, like a lot of you have said as well. I, again, do the same. I'll either tap my phone, or I'll download the app beforehand, and I'll get my ticket for the day or for the week. So that works really well. And since being part of this project, I've been looking at traffic flow and stuff like that, because I've actually been noticing bus drivers when they're checking on their app and where their holdups are. So like, it was really funny, we're talking about transport, is because my sister came yesterday and she's like, oh, there was two buses, one was empty, one was full, and the bus wasn't going anywhere. And I was like, but did you know the reason that could be happening? There may have been a held up somewhere else, and that's why the buses then decided to stop in its peak time traffic. They might not want to have so many people getting off at the same time, so they decide to hold back, so they're not bringing more people into the city when there's such a cluster of people. So that could be the reason why. And she said, oh, actually, yeah, you're right, I never thought about that. As I said, next time when something like that happens, just actually ask the driver, maybe look at the app, because they actually see where the clusters of traffic and where there's more people, and it's a health and safety thing. I'm sure there's all those technical things that they look at, which then brings me on to, so when we've all talked about our experience getting in today, do we all, or how do we think about the technical side of how things are presented to us? So I'd like to, so anyone can answer, I'm not going to go around, you just give your experience in terms of what you found so far, in terms of what technical and AI, I'd say data maybe, is used to us to get to that point for us to be able to travel, and using the different modes of transport that we do. So just jump in at any time and have a thought, think about, you know, what do you think is used, and how our data is used on our day-to-day, or when we are traveling, what kind of goes into it, what things come to you, and what have you found in your experience so far, because we've all got very different experiences. So
I'll say something. I don't know if this is directly related to your question, but when I sometimes use the first app or Google Maps, you can like, sometimes they give you a little survey at the end to like rate your experience using the app and stuff. And I feel like that's useful with app development and stuff, because then they can go and then review how the app is and how accessible it is for people. And like, I feel like it's really useful, because then you can see changes made to the app that make it easier for you to use the app.
So you're saying the importance of like customer services, ratings, all that.
Yes.
You see that there's a benefit to that?
Yes, I do see a benefit to that.
So do you normally use, prior to doing your community reporting side, would you have normally thought about that beforehand in terms of the service aspect?
I've always found doing the surveys fun. I'm not sure why. I always love doing the surveys. Even when you get YouTube ads and they tell you what do you use, I love doing those.
Okay.
Because I feel like I'm being a part of the change. Yeah.
I like that.
So that I just find it fun.
That's good. That's brilliant. Thank you very much. Anybody else would like to share in terms of, you know, their experience in terms of the technicalities or maybe data?
I think that was a very good comment that's just been made, because with the tech, we know that innovation or technology, it keeps evolving. So when these apps are taking our data in or you know, looking at how we are using it, then it's sort of a public transport integrated system that looks into, you know, what is the time when the customers are using it at the maximum, or what is the most in order to, let's say, you know, controlling congestion and things. Mm-hmm. So data helps obviously to improve the app, but there are cities that use this data and also, you know, to figure out what is the traffic congestion time, you know, perhaps to look into how train frequency could be changed, or, you know, train times could be changed. So all that data feeds into obviously to make the app more useful, but also perhaps to, you know, help make that system more integrated with the usage. But obviously there are ifs and buts with data collection, which perhaps we'll come later on in our discussion. But yes, in the first go, I'd say that it's useful, but as long as people know what the data is being used for.
Thank you, Edward.
I mean, coming on from that, a point I kind of was thinking about was traveling in and sat navs versus Google Maps, and you get very different answers using different types of technology. Now, I mean, I think Google is relatively accurate, so that's the one I would kind of use. You know, there are other apps for predicting car times. Obviously, the accuracy will depend on the quality of data and how it's all written. But I think I have a frustration on times that these things are not as good as they could be. So, you know, predicting how long it's going to take from A to get from A to B should be relatively simple, I would think. But we're still quite inaccurate, I think. And so there can be an overconfidence in how good these things are. And so I think there's a slight frustration for me on how and whether they're actually better than they used to be, where we would just guess without using the technology.
That's a good point, thank you.
I would like to add to that, to say sometimes what I find is, and I've seen on the news as well, where people have put to get from A to B on Google Maps, and they ended up either falling into a river or they didn't have the common sense to, you know, navigate that. But that again just points out the infrastructure and the need of, you know, we're building a lot and, you know, the cities are changing. I think that's what brings into mind.
Yeah, and mine is the same point, like with the same discussion that Google is giving the reviews. You know, that there's a lot of the people are keeping reviews that how this app is useful to you. And we don't have to go to the person that how was your experience during the traveling and how was the app working. Mm-hmm. Everything is on the app and different people are giving, like you say, there's different reviews and different experience. Everyone hasn't got the same experience and everyone's reviews are different. Mm-hmm. So it's not rather than reading only two or three, we have to go all through, and we don't have to ask any person or our friends or the family that how was your experience, and we don't have to waste their time by calling them. We can read all this, everything the reviews given there, and then whatever we are following, then we can go ahead with the app. That's also useful.
It is. I just want to touch on that, Bindu, because I disagree. Since doing community reporting, I ask people, how is your journey today, or how is this? So for example, if you've gone shopping, if you've gone to use a new app, because I'm all about it. I like to know about apps and stuff. So I think for me now, doing community reporting, I love hearing people's stories. So yes, I do go and read Google reviews, but I will go and ask, like I'll post stuff on social media, like, who's anybody used this service before that, because I like to hear stories from people. And I think for me, that's what's primary, is because, yeah, Google reviews will give you a certain structure, or any review system will give you a certain structure. And it's like, you know, it's created to give you certain data at the end of it. But I think when you're hearing stories and the nuances of the person who's telling the story, it gives a totally different picture. So I just wanted to turn and I want people to think about that.
Yeah, I agree with you. But, you know, only the local people that we can meet and we can discuss with them. But throughout the UK also, for example, if we say it's not only the UK, I'm talking about, only for 3-4 cities like Leicestershire, then how about the people that we are not seeing them lively? Then we can hear some more experience from them. So, and this is a more easier way, and this is a more easier app that we can use.
Of course, this is having the but I hear what you're saying is yourself, come.
Yeah, just to add to what Edward was saying about the difference between SatNav and Google Maps, but also we have Waze, and they have different levels of participation from users. So, for example, you have Waze, probably you know, you can report an incident, or you can say something is changing in the road, or something is blocking the path. And this, the intervention of the users on the app and the result that the app is providing is important as well. Because, I mean, you can say something that is not true, right? And then you affect the functionality of the application. But in terms of smart cities as well, going back to the main topic that we're covering today, if we are getting the information from the users, that information is affecting the way the applications and the systems work. And it's important also to educate people on how they can participate in the applications and the community as well.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you very much. So I'd like to bring it to... So we've all talked about the things that are kind of working, and we've all had different experiences coming in. I want to talk about... So what is it that you think, in terms of your journey and the day-to-day, what do you think that does need improving that we're not doing so smartly, I guess, as a city? Does anything come to mind to anyone?
Perhaps I'll touch upon that. Maybe it'll open the discussion to an important topic, which is, are we ensuring that those apps, that technology, whatever is, you know, the new stuff that's there, is that usable by everyone? Can everyone access that app? Do everyone have that access to technology? I mean, is it disabled friendly? Is it, especially also for aging population? So especially we're in Leicester, and aging is one of the key issues that we have here. So I think that opens the discussion to a very important topic, and something that we're looking at in this project. That what about inclusion? Are we ensuring that it is all these apps, all this new technology is inclusive? So I'd say that's a key issue that we should all think around.
Yeah. Any thoughts? Anyone want to start off with a conversation?
I think it's not, and I think there's going to be a lot of people that will be left behind in terms of digital divide. They won't have access to any internet, they won't have access to any tools, laptops or iPads, whatever it may be, and we have seen that through the pandemics where, you know, school children that during the lockdown, they could not participate in class lessons online because their families couldn't afford to get a laptop. They couldn't afford, it was probably one phone among the whole family that they were using. So we've seen that. And on top of that, they probably didn't have high-speed internet, you know, and or even not having any internet whatsoever. And their families was using data to keep the children active and in learning. And even as we know, you know, reaching out to families abroad as well, because 2 years of being in lockdown as well.
Can I just add to that? I quite like the fact that you mentioned internet, because in entirety as a nation, we're talking about 5G, and there are families who still don't have access to, you know, internet or Wi-Fi connections and things. So on one hand, we are thinking about having, you know, integrated systems where buildings are connected, trains are connected, or systems are connected. But on the other hand, we have people who do not have access. So that brings, you know, inclusivity as a really, really important topic to talk about.
Yeah, I mean, another element of that to me is we're going towards a cashless society. I mean, you've all mentioned, you know, you're using, you know, your kind of iPhones to buy train tickets, bus tickets, whatever. There's still a significant proportion of the population likes to use cash, right? And if we're going to move to a cashless society, which essentially we are, I think that well, it might be great for many of us, right? Because you don't have to carry cash, which was always a pain. It alienates a large proportion of the population that either don't have the tech to be able to access cashless or don't have access to the financial resources that you need, a bank account and so on, or just simply don't want to use it. So I think that's a big challenge.
I'd like to give an example, because it's good how you said about those who don't have access to it, because I, on a weekly basis, I have to go to the cash point for my father. He's in his 70s. He can use his card, but then he forgets his PIN number. So he'll remember the first two numbers and he can't finish the rest of it, right? So either myself or my brother, always weekly, we have to go and draw out money from him because he likes to have cash. And guess what? When I don't have cash, because I'm doing everything by card, I'm like, Dad, can I borrow some money? Because I like going to the corner shop and I like to go and buy stuff. So I think it's a really good point about how you're talking about having that actual cash in your hand. And I think the last 2 years has kind of taken that away. And I think people are gravitating more from a mental health aspect and being able to feel, they're more gravitating back to that. Sorry, can you just go back to Bindu? Sorry.
Yes, I agree with you. And even the elder people, they are always avoiding to take card with them. But nowadays, the new generations, even the smart cities, supporting us and asking us to use plastic money. Yeah. And plastic money is not all the time is working. My experience yesterday that I'm sharing with you, one of the customer arrived and she said that, I don't have any change, I don't have any cash, are you taking card? I said, yeah, I'm taking. But it was my very first experience with my business, and we have just bought it from online, this machine to pay by card. But the machine stopped working at the time, and they were waiting, and there was a long queue, and I have to ask her, please, you go at the moment, you don't worry about the money. And she said, I'm coming back with the change and then I will pay you. Two of the customers that I have lose because they don't have change. Mm-hmm. And I can't maintain with the app, the payment machine. So this is also happening sometimes. And many of the listeners, they are struggling with the internet. Sometimes they are going for the GP, they have appointment, they have to ask the children or the neighbor to help them out. They don't know when they are having their appointment, whether they are calling. Sometimes they are calling, they have to wait for longer in a queue. So again, if they can't access through email, it's hard for them. Yeah, still there are many of the people like you have mentioned. We have lots of people here, even the elder and the many family. They haven't got access for the internet.
Yeah, and I think this is why I'll go back to the point about the whole health and well-being and talking about our ages getting older, is that digital divide that we started off the start of the conversation. I'm just going to go to Ruben and then...
Okay, I was just wondering who should cover the cost of infrastructure and also giving access or facilitating access to people to the technology. And I would like to hear the opinion of the rest of you. I mean, from my point of view, it should be the state. I mean, we should. That's why we pay taxes, and we should cover those costs as many other costs. Using our public resources, but not only for the infrastructure, but also to facilitate the access to the technology to people that don't have enough resources.
Mm. I think that in itself is a whole new discussion about who is involved, which parties are involved in that decision, who's involved in that decision making before these infrastructure changes happen. So I think that's the point. Can we put a hold on that? But I'm just going to get Medina to go to it, and then we'll open that debate up again. Medina.
Yeah, I was going to say, from a young person's perspective, especially in schools, it's a bit of a taboo subject to talk about needing financial aid or financial support or wanting that extra support from schools. Like, a lot of students wouldn't tell their peers that they're free school meals or pupil premium, or that they get extra support, or that they can't afford school uniforms, because people are like, why can't you afford it? And in the classroom, there's so much disparities between different students. You'll be sitting in a classroom and you're all learning the same things, but some people are worried about when their next meal is, and the only meal of the day is at school, whilst others don't have to think about those problems. And I don't think it's fair. Obviously, it's not anyone's problem. I mean,
isn't it?
I mean, it's not anyone's fault. That's what I was trying to say. It's not anyone in particular, but it's not nice for young people, especially. A lot of people get bullied and stuff, and I've seen it myself, and I honestly think it's horrible. So I know some schools do provide the support, like taking into account the child's mental health and their social aspect of the school side. So I think that's good, but I think the government should be doing a lot more than what they are doing.
Okay, so as a young person being in education right now, what do you think that needs to happen so these kind of things are not, where there isn't that divide of rich versus poor, or, you know, single parent income, for example, or, you know, income where they've got a full, you know, both parents and stuff like that for that. What do you think, what would you like to see as a young person?
I think a lot more equity, because when, say, for example, a teacher would give out homework, some people are not able to do that homework because when they go home, they don't have time. Maybe they're a young carer, they have to do things, their parents are at work, they don't have Wi-Fi, they don't have the internet. So the only time they have to do things is at school. Whereas others don't have those added stresses and worries. They can go home and do their homework and then that's done. So I think a lot more understanding from teachers would be helpful, but then again, I think it's bigger than teachers. I think maybe tuition sessions and tutoring after school, but then again, some people can't do after school tutoring because they have other commitments. So I don't, it's a weird one, because I feel like there's not a set thing that you can do. Then you're gonna have to open the door and just give people different options.
See what they need.
Yeah, see what they need.
And it's like you say, it's having the option to begin with.
Yes.
And then working from that place of what is better for education.
Yeah, being asked, what do you need?
Or at least having the discussion to open up that door, like you say, is to know that you've got choice, and there's people that you can speak to at school that can influence that change for your education. That's a really good point. Thank you for that. I think that's definitely another discussion we can continue as well.
But to try and link these two things together, I mean, I think that the schools seem to be bringing in the digital aspects even more, right? Which, I mean, is fine, because those are skills that children need. But I think that has aggravated the divide between rich and poor more than it used to be before. So I find it a bit bizarre on times where you hear of schools basically forcing parents to buy laptops and iPads for children where they clearly can't afford it. It's now an extra element of the school uniform. And it's just going to aggravate this. And okay, they've then got an iPad, but do they have broadband access to use the iPad? So I think that's making the situation worse and something that needs to be addressed, which then comes back to the whole funding question. And you just need a lot of funding, I think, to address these problems. So I don't believe the state should be doing everything in terms of digital, but I think in terms of schools and making digital accessible to children, I think that's definitely an area where the state should be more involved.
I just have a question for what you said. Where do you think the funding should come from then?
So, well, that's difficult. I don't know exactly how it works. But let's say you have a school that wants its children to use laptops, right? Then I think it's a basic requirement of the state that all of the children should have access to those laptops. Now, I don't know how it's done at the moment, whether you could give those, say, on free school meals, get some kind of help in buying the laptop. But I mean, you know, I think the state should be buying laptops for children if that's a core requirement, you know, and because that is important not only just in a quality point of view, but then in the social mobility point of view. Because if laptops are essential and poor people don't have laptops, you're just not creating a way out.
I get your point. I do honestly agree, but I would say that it would work for the state to provide students with laptops, because that's taxpayers' money, and tax is increasing, and the living cost is increasing, and people's wages are staying the same, and people are finding it hard to live already. So if you add that added tax to, you know, provide those digital things, couldn't that money be better spent somewhere else.
Yeah, well, I was going to say maybe that should be a standard thing that would be added into the people premium. So because when a child is getting people premium and the government is paying for the school for that child's upkeep, then that should be automatically be a device should be given to that family of that child. Mm-hmm. I think that should be a standard thing. That's the only way I can think of solving it. Mm-hmm. Rather, you know.
And it doesn't necessarily mean that we have to increase the taxes to get funding for that. Maybe just spending more efficiently or stop spending in things that are not necessary and redistributing that.
So understanding budgeting and kind of how to make use of what we have, I think is a, I think we're seeing that working in the community and working within education myself is having the basic understanding of how to budget. I think the last 2.5 years, people have and have learnt, and some have forgotten because we've not been in our normal working environment. So that's a good point about budgeting and budgeting literacy, I'd like to call it, more understanding around that. Go on.
Yeah, I just wanted to add something else. Would you say then it'd have to be like a bottom up approach? Like, wouldn't it be better to develop a smart city properly to first put more money into the schools and ensure that the students all have what they need so then they can go on and get the jobs that they want and stuff, and not only then focus on society and go outwards that way, if that makes sense? So focus on like education and family and healthcare, and then think about like mobility and infrastructure, because why is that the first thing that they focus on and not the people aspect of it?
Yeah, good point. Thank you for that. Swati, please.
Yeah, I think in terms of all this whole redistribution idea and where the funding should come from and what should we put in place, I think the main thing here is that how do we use tech rather than how much tech we use? So sometimes, tech solutions are offered which are not required. So the state or the Leicester City has to, or the citizens have to decide that, you know, the tech has to be adopted in such a way that it's citizen-centered. It's not just provided by big corporations like IBM who are giving tech solutions and then, you know, just offering that for the sake of it. So, I mean, whether it's for schools or whether it's for mobility or whether it's to bring down crime rate. So you first have to decide on the objective of it and then determine that, you know, what sort of how tech can offer a solution and then not just bring tech for the sake of it. That's what I feel. So probably redistribution of funds in a way that, you know, offers answers to these questions.
Yeah, I think that's a very good point. I think at the moment we're kind of falling into smart cities being pulled by the big tech companies, right? So Apple, okay, they come out with the iPhone, they come out with the iPad, lots of people like it. It then gets a critical mass, you know, so people are using it, but then alienates that, you know, half of the population, 20% of the population that aren't accessing it. So we're kind of being dragged into this smart city world. And I think it's for public policy to try and catch up and get a little bit ahead of the game. So I think in terms of education, for instance, schools have always been very slow adapting to technology. They've always been behind the curve, right? And that's not to criticise teachers or anything, but, you know, teachers are often of a generation that didn't have access to the tech, and so they're always kind of behind the curve. And I think public policy needs to get more ahead of the game.
My perception says there's cool, whatever, according to my thoughts and my perceptions, they're perfect, because device technology, when we are giving to the children, rather than studying with their subject, they are going on a different app and they are just moving to the different, all, you know, the device nowadays, whatever the children are using, they are more forward than their age. And that also is a more important point. And the criminals, all the very young children, they are more crime they are doing than the adult nowadays. All these situations is changing because of the device and the new technology. They are dragging children as well. So we are progressing. Yeah, anyway, we are progressing. But we have to keep watching children, what they are doing with the device and what they are learning with the device. Yeah, not every family have got a very understanding children. Many children are very naughty, so we have to keep eye on them as well. So certain app only that we have to download, and we have to keep eye what they are using on that device. That is also more important. And each and every person are using device at home nowadays. Everyone is forcefully like dragged into the device to use. Otherwise, if you are not using device, for my, if I'm giving my example, I'm like a simple housewife and I just wanted to do my old stuff with my manual product. So the, I'm very behind, to be honest. I'm not very expert with the device. And if I'm not expert with the device, I'm behind right now. I don't know how to do, go ahead with the society, like new technology. So the reason I'm here for the community reporter, so I want to learn more about the smart project. And we can be smart. If you're not smart, you're not looking smart if you're not using. So it's the benefits and it's advantage and disadvantage as well. So... UK government have announced that from October they are rising the electricity bills. And without electricity, we can't move.
Yeah, that's a whole nother topic.
So we have to control our use as well.
Yeah. I'd like to just pause on there, Binny. So, Edward, you said about you've both said about education and how... Is smart city is really, do we need to be smart as to what we're being told by the conglomerate, is what I'm hearing from everyone. And then you've got the divide in terms of we're saying we need to be digital literate in our education. But I, for me, my question is, how smart do we need to be as a city of Leicester in terms of where we're all at in our different institutions and what we're doing in our day to day? And also, surely to bring policy change and the changes we need to in the infrastructure, surely it needs to be about the community we're going to be using the services, right? Whether it's from primary to all the way through university to in our working roles that we're all doing now. So my question is, how smart do we need to be in order to call ourselves a smart city? And are we looking at cities like London and the bigger conglomerates, like you're looking at, when we did our research, we were looking at places like Europe, Singapore, South Africa, Zurich. We were looking at all those other countries in terms of what they're doing. But then what happens to their health and well-being? What's the knock-on effect of that? So I'd really like us to kind of think about that and what's happening currently within our infrastructure of the city of Leicester right now. I'd like you to think about. So whoever's ready to take that, Medina.
I wouldn't say London is a smart city at all, because
you've just come from there, so do tell us about your experience.
No, because the disparities between different areas, you can have on the same road there are a block of flats that are not good quality, there's mold and damp, and then you have lovely townhouses that are like 900k minimum. And I think the focus of people is the image of everything, and everything's just surface level. You're not dealing with the issue. You're not dealing with the root of the problems. You're just dealing with stuff that's arising because of it. And I personally think to become a smart city, you need to go from the foundations. You need to fix the foundations. So put more funding and show the citizens of your cities or your nation that you want to help them and that you are there to support them. Because at the end of the day, the government is who we elected. They're supposed to be working for us. And if they're not helping us, what's the point? Because we're not reaping any reward from anything that they're doing, and we're not reaping any reward from where we're living. And I just think there needs to be a lot of change that needs to be made. But I don't know, I guess that's a conversation for another day.
But I guess from what you're saying then is having infrastructure which is community-led.
Yes.
Is what you're saying.
Yes,
as
it should
a young
be
person
for
in
the people.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyone else?
Yeah, I think what you're saying is important, but also we need to take into account that cities are dealing with different problems at the same time. And also they are competing with other cities as well. And the citizens that live in those cities are competing with the citizens of other cities. If we want to increase employment in Leicester, then we have to think, well, what is it that other cities that which we compete with are doing, right? And in terms of technology as well, they are moving faster than us or not? And in which direction are they moving? Something important that you mentioned is how is that affecting well-being of the citizens, right? How are they doing in their cities? And etc.
Yeah, so I guess the go on, Zamzam.
Then that brings, I think, an important question to, you know, with the fast pace that we're going, who are we leaving behind? I think that's something that I'm asking around the table.
Yeah, and I think that feeds into what I was going to say about this. To me, a smart city is about smart data. And I think, for instance, there's a perception that, say, the city council has lots of information about Leicester, and frankly, you know, they don't genuinely. There's missing gaps we don't know about, and so on. So I think that the starting point for an inclusive and socially good smart city is collecting the right data. And the tech companies have no incentive to do that, because poor people are not going to give them money. So they're not interesting. So I think there needs to be a separate infrastructure of collecting the right kind of data, which I know the city council's, you know, trying to do. But they don't have the data that we might imagine they did have.
Yeah. Very good point. Thank you, Swati.
Yeah, I kind of agree completely with what Edward just said. But before I address that point, I also like what Medina said about, you know, consumer or, you know, people-centered infrastructure. Because to me, smart city is not just about using tech to optimize efficiency or operations. It's to use tech to improve the quality of life. And that's where we need to ensure that tech that's used is consumer-centered or people-centered. So that's the thing. And then in terms of the data, I think Edward has just raised a really important point, because data accuracy is very, very important. AI, machine learning, or, you know, all that stuff, robotics, they all run on algorithms. And for that, you need data. And if the data is not rich, it doesn't come through a transparent system where people are aware what is the reason the data is collected for. So then, you know, you have a sort of a bias. You have really, you know, introduce a bias into the system. So the way the data is collected, accurate data to ensure that there's no bias, you know, whether it's conscious or unconscious, but that's really, really important. And that comes from the fact that people who develop that tech or who use that tech, they are diverse. Yeah. And that leads us to the fact that where we are sitting right now, Leicester has a huge diverse community. So it all connects to one point where we need to bring the community together, because then that would ensure that we are developing something, or we are moving towards something that's less, you know, biased, or it's more diverse and it's more transparently and accurately developed and used. Yeah. So people should be aware of what the technology is, why it is being used for, what sort of data is being collected from them. I mean, we need to also avoid things like commercial advertising or, you know, unnecessary advertising coming, or you know, sort of crime rate increasing because of data collection. I mean, think of a situation. I know that there could be surveillance cameras on the street to reduce crime, but I'm being captured on that camera, and that data could feed into a wrong sort of...
Something else. For what you think it is,
yes,
for, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, a conscious recording of data is very, very important. That's what I think.
Yeah. I mean, just to quickly go on from that, and I think different communities have different concerns about data. I mean, that's somewhat of a theme with the census project that we did before, and reluctance to fill in the census, but it might be reluctant to fill in other forms or engage with the government in any way. And then you end up with gaps in the data that, you know, so you've got to, on the one hand, reassure people about data, but on the other hand, make them aware of the problems with giving too much data away.
There needs to be a transparency, isn't there, to how, you know, the data that's being collected, how is that data being used, and who's, you know, protecting that data, who's got access to that data as well. So it really does raise a lot of questions in that sense.
I was going to say, in terms of like data, right, the government collects data for their own use, but there are a lot of private companies that can also have access to that data. And I think that goes hand in hand with like globalization, because everything's about competition. Every company wants to be the best. Every country wants to be the best. Every city wants to be the best. And it's not about the people anymore. It's about the image and the way they are seen by, like, elsewhere. So I think that in terms of data, yes, it is beneficial. Like certain data is definitely beneficial to the development of life and the quality of life, but most of it isn't being used ethically. If that's
yeah,
if that makes sense.
That's great. Thank you very much for that. Bindu?
Moving to the Edward point that about this council, all these councils have got our data and everything. Like my experience says that even though I have paid all council tax, still council is saying that I haven't paid any tax. And I'm receiving every time a letter. And already we have sent the email. We say that this is the email, this is a proof. And again they are sending and they are charging me more amount. And every year it is happening. Amount is growing up and up and up. And that is giving me headache.
Yeah,
so our smart city is dragging us towards the poverty. And that we don't want. And even though we are clearing everything, even the amount that what we are receiving, what we are earning, that also we have cleared. And there's no people that we can talk face to face.
This is my point.
Whenever I'm going to the Leicester City Council office, they say, just post your letter. And I have already posted before 2 years. And again, every single month that I'm receiving, that is giving me more headache. Like the people are not working, only they're not working like a simple life. They have to take headache every single day. And every single day, and they say that now we are going to dismiss
it's
your...
It's going to digitize everything.
Yes. Yeah. And same with the energy.
Yeah. So I think before we wrap up, I just want to say to your point, Bindu, is so again, when we came back to data accuracy, that's all to do with because what I'm seeing now over the last 2 years, because they've not had the people and the infrastructure in place, things like utility bills, let's not talk about price rises, that's not that. But in terms of catching up on bills, because they didn't have the people, now they have, now they're catching up on 2 years to reclaim that money back. So that kind of answers a little bit about what's been happening, why people are getting bills 2 years later. Yeah. And that's to do with the digital and lack of digital literacy.
With the Virgin Media as well, like we have got bills and they have said that you have spent more Virgin this points. Sorry.
You've gone outside of your membership than what you normally
would. Yes, and you have spent more this data from this. And so your phone bills are high, even though we haven't received, we haven't spent that much this GB, and they keep increasing our price. And then we are talking all the time, there's a different people.
A different person, yes. Is never the same person. Yeah.
And they're taking all data and then asking them from first to end. They're asking all questions. And we have to explain everything and spending time all the...
Unfortunately, yes. It's just until... This is the whole thing. It comes back to data. If the data's there, the infrastructure's there, then we would not be having to call up these energy companies or whatever services we're using where we have to keep having the same conversation. So now we're going to close off. If we'd like to go around the table and just have any parting words, any messages. So we'll start with Medina and then...
Yeah, I think this was a very interesting discussion. I could honestly go on for hours. I feel there's a lot that can be changed. And like spaces like this, opening these discussions is very important for that change to be made. Even it's just education purposes, because I think I don't know about you guys, but I've learned a lot from you all today as well.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bindu, anything?
Yes, even myself, I have learned many things from here. Lively, I haven't attended only the one of the sessions that we have done with Medina and Zamzam. But all this information is very good and helpful to us. And I'm just hoping that our smart city is real smart city.
Well, the more data we collect, hopefully we can be. And, yourself, Edward.
Collect more data is the answer, but it has to be the good data and the right data. We know how to interpret it properly. I mean, you've just been talking about council tax, but, you know, there's an overconfidence in data on times, even though the data is wrong. And so... It's understanding data is really important.
I'll say transparency in terms of where the data go, but also consultation with communities, because I feel like that's what's lacking, because I don't see enough consultations happening within Leicester, and I'm constantly seeing new things being invented or being done to the city. So where do we access those information or those consultations?
Yeah. Thank you.
thank you.
Yeah, I think design is important as well. So how do we design a really smart city? Okay, and then what do we include in the design? So we touch different points here. Mm. So all those points, I think, and many more should be included in the design of
us. And that, again, that comes down to public engagement, I think, which we all echo. Swati, closing words, please.
Yeah, I'll just end on the fact that everything helps with awareness, and our project, the conversations we are having, they're kind of the first step towards creating that awareness. And especially we're creating a new generation of reporters here, all of you community reporters who are helping us on the project. So I'm pretty sure with public engagement, talking to people, conversation, that awareness could start to build up.
Yeah. For me, 100%, it's about breaking down the apathy of providing data and transparency. And I think, again, asking the questions of when these forums have been happening before decision-making is done, when the community is not at the heart of it. I think that's something that's fundamental to all the work that I do day in, day out. And being a community reporter, I've seen a lot of apathy in people not wanting to give their two cents worth, so to speak. They want to give their stories, but they're not sure where it's going, what's happening with it. And I think the work with what's happening with this is amazing, and I think more people need to know about it, more awareness needs to be raised about it. And I think now we've got more reporters we can get and people to tell their story, to put in into the infrastructure. So thank you very much for today, really fruitful conversation, and I'm sure we'll be speaking again. Thank you.